Vivian asked the question, maybe we're all wondering, where are the chocolate chips? That's a good. When Molly walked in, she turned and looked at me and went, bleh. Tough way to start a new year. If you're wondering that my clothes aren't as festive as last week, the suits for baby new year were a little less flattering, so I opted not to, but it's good to see all of you out on New Year's Day, and we welcome those that are joining us on Facebook. The first Sunday, the first year, or the first day of the year, and I'm glad you decided to join us here this morning. This morning we're going to talk about buying in, going all in on what God and we are trying to accomplish here at Colquhoun. There's a story of a first-year head coach for a high school basketball team. He was fresh out of college, and he was young and brash and thought maybe he knew a little more than he actually did. And the first game come, and the night before, he couldn't sleep at all. And so he just really wanted to get the game going and get it started and get that long career moving in that winning direction. They happened to have three games that night, a junior high boys, a senior high girls, and then a senior high boys. So he got double duty. And that first game, with everyone wondering how this new coach would do, his team went out and produced a total of 2 points for the whole first half. And that's it. That's not very many points. And he wondered, what do you say to a team that scores 2 points and a half? He was kind of scared to say anything at all. He thought that he had given the most game-winning, inspiring speech that he could think of. He had rehearsed it the night before. He felt that this was about as John Wooden-esque as he could get, and it produced 2 points. He was scared if he said anything else to them that they may not score for the rest of the year. Now, that second half, they went out. They did score more than 2 points. The other team scored a lot more than 2 points, so they lost pretty bad. But the coach said that he learned something pretty valuable that night. He learned that you better adapt quickly and adjust quickly, and he also learned that they had some work to do. A successful coach is composed of several different attributes. They're a master motivator, they're a brilliant strategist, a hard worker, but for any of those things to work, there has to be buy-in from the team. He has to have those kids buy into the idea that the team has to understand what the coach is trying to do, how he's trying to do it, and what they need to do to accomplish that goal, the price that has to be paid in order to get there. That's what buy-in is, and that's what every coach is seeking from his team. And I would say that's what every church leadership is seeking from its members that they lead. After that first game, the coach went back to the drawing board. He did some X's and O's, but mostly he focused on showing the team what it meant to be a family. He had the team over to his house. They did team building activities. They were together a lot because he felt that the closer that they were as a team, the more successful they would be. And he stressed what family looks like. Family picks one another up. Family encourages one another. Family weeps with those who weep and rejoices with those who rejoice. And church is the same way. We are a team. We are a collection of individuals united in a common goal, and so we have to understand what family is all about. If we're going to build a winning culture, then we have to have buy-in from everybody as well. It starts at the top when you have a buy-in. When the church or when the team understands what it takes to get there, the price that has to be paid, it can become a beautiful thing. It shows up on the court, and it certainly shows up as Christians. It shows up in our daily lives. The decisions you make and the actions that you take, how much you dedicate, all of that is dependent on buy-in. So why talk about this? Well, mostly because I like to win, and I believe that heaven is won in the here and now. So let's look at Numbers chapter 32, beginning in verse 1. Numbers 32, verse 1, it says, "Now the people of Reuben and the people of Gad had a very great number of livestock. And they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, and behold, the place that was a place for livestock. So the people of Gad and the people of Reuben came and said to Moses and to Eleazar the priest and to the chiefs among the congregation. I'm going to say a bunch of names wrong, so just settle down. Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Eliah, Saban, Nebu, and beyond. The land that the Lord struck down before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. And they said, if you have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants for a possession. Do not take us across the Jordan. Now there's a whole lot going here, that they've left Egypt and they're on their way to the promised land, that the tribes of Reuben and Gad had not bought all the way in. You can see that happening here, that they wanted to stop on the other side of the Jordan so they wouldn't have to go and help their brothers fight. This posed a problem. Moses was not pleased with their choice or request, that they stopped short of their destiny. And Israel really represents us in so many ways, that they're a precursor, a shadow of the church, that they were delivered from bondage. We've been delivered from bondage. We have been redeemed. We have been fitted for heaven and sustained by God. And yet many of his children still today never cross the Jordan River, instead settle for less than what God has in store for them. And I'm standing in front of you asking you to keep moving forward and not stop short of your destiny. Maybe some of you here today are still in Egypt, meaning that you've never left the bondage of sin. And if that's you, I'm glad that you're here with us. And I pray that you keep coming and wanting to study more, because Egypt is no place for you and you need to get out of bondage and slavery. However, there may be some of you here today that left Egypt a long time ago, but you've never crossed the Jordan. You've been delivered, but you haven't reached your destination. When we know that we won't do that in one day, it's a constant moving toward a destination. But many people have stopped. They might plant down in a pew and say, that's good enough. I believe this is where you need to be, and we can help you move. Just don't settle. Don't settle for the here and now. It says this in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 23, that he brought us out from there, that he might bring us in and give us land that he swore to give to our fathers. God brought the people of Israel out of Egypt to bring them to the promised land. And God has brought you out as a Christian out of the land of sin and darkness to bring you to a land of promise and hope. But again, there are many Christians who haven't been brought in. They've been brought out, but they haven't been brought in. Too many people have found contentment on this side of the Jordan. They've accepted a settlement that is far less than their inheritance. The tribes of Reuben and Gad decided that the land east of the Jordan would be a great place to settle because they had a large number of livestock and it'd be a good place for them to graze. They surveyed the land. They thought, this is going to work pretty good for us. Maybe they even rationalized by saying something like, we're not even really being greedy. You guys take all the rest of the land. We'll just stay right here. Maybe some of us have done the same thing. Maybe you've rationalized your choice to stop moving. Maybe you've said something like, you should have seen me 20 years ago. I'm a lot farther along than I was back then. You should have seen me back then. I'm not the same person I was anymore. But is that good enough? And really the answer is no. And the reason why is because we were made for far more. That the tribes of Reuben and Gad had settled, and it disturbed Moses. Verse 6 says, But Moses said to the people of Gad and to the people of Reuben, shall your brothers go to the war while you sit here? Why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that the Lord has given them? Your fathers did this when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshel and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the people of Israel from going into the land that the Lord had given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled on that day. And he swore, saying, surely none of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and upward shall see the land that I swore to give to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me. Verse 12 says, none except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kehizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. And the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness for 40 years until all that generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone. And behold, you have risen up in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to increase still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will again abandon them in the wilderness and will destroy all this people. Moses says, are you telling me you're going to plop down on this side of the river while your brothers go and fight? The only reason you have this land to plop down in is because of your brothers and the fighting that they've done. You can't stop now. You're going to discourage the rest of them. And Moses believed that they would incur the wrath of God because of what had happened in the past. And here's why you can't settle. Because God expects you to fight. To say I'm content, to say good enough, is to exempt yourself from the battle. It's bowl season right now in college football. If you watch college football, especially right now, you hear a lot about players opting out of a bowl game because of maybe opportunities in the NFL or they're going to another place. But you can't opt out here. Opting out is not an option. We can't settle. That there's a battle at hand, and if we are to opt out, that means we make the battle even heavier and hotter for those that chose to fight. Moses' concern was if these two tribes opt out, that would increase the pressure on those fighting on the front lines. You know, back when the West was being settled, the major form of transportation was the stagecoach. And riding on the stagecoach, there were three different types of ticket holders. You had first class, second class, and third class. If you were first class, you were top of the line. That meant you could sit the entire trip. If a wheel came off or broke off or you got stuck in the mud and they needed a push, that didn't happen to you. You just stayed in your seat. If you were second class and trouble came, you could sit for a while, but if they needed you, you had to go help. If you were third class, it was part of your responsibility to help. If a wheel came off or the wagon got stuck, whatever the wagon needed, it was your job to go help. You didn't get to rest. And I'm not talking locally, but in many churches, there are a lot of first class ticket holders. There are a lot of people who just sit and watch while everybody else does the work. In some places, there are second-class ticket holders, people that sit and wait to see if somebody else is going to do the job. If it's not getting done, they may lend a help. But the church needs to be full of third-class ticket holders. Every single one of us should be a third-class ticket holder. Any job that needs to be done, you roll up your sleeves and you go to work. You look for opportunities. We're all third-class ticket holders in that we are all scanning the landscape, not trying to get too comfortable, ready to dig in and help whenever a need arises, because that's what we're called to do as servants. We're called to get in, to dig in, and go to work. And for the tribes of Reuben and Gad to settle east of the Jordan meant that their brothers would go off and fight without them. And Moses was concerned about their attitudes and actions, that they would be contagious. Again, verse 7, he says, why will you discourage the heart of the people of Israel from going over into the land that the Lord had given them? If you want to know how to stop growing as a Christian, just hang out with people who are stagnant. Hang out with people who have quit growing. Moses knew that for the other tribes to see the actions of Reuben and Gad, it might make them choose to quit too. In fact, if you read all of Numbers 32, you'd find that the half-tribe of Manasseh did just that. They decided to sit as well. Reuben and Gad's attitude infected and affected all those around them. But here's another reason that Moses was upset. Because Reuben and Gad hadn't learned their lesson. 38 years prior to this, a recon mission was done on the land of Ai to see if the land truly was flowing with milk and honey. And most of the spies come back with a false report. They say there are these giants living in the land, and it certainly was a land flowing with milk and honey, but it's filled with strong people and fortified cities. And so these spies give a false report, and they incur the wrath of God. Moses here is afraid that the same thing would happen because of the actions of Reuben and Gad. Because you're choosing to stay put instead of striking out, Moses says or thinks that the results could be the same. He says, haven't you learned your lesson? But the tribes of Reuben and Gad, they try to rationalize. And in verse 16, it says that they came near to him, being Moses, and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our little ones. And we will take up arms ready to go before the people of Israel until we have brought them to their place. And our little ones shall live in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until each of the people of Israel has gained his inheritance. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has come on this side of the Jordan to the east. And you'll notice how they keep saying our inheritance. It wasn't your inheritance, but they made it out to be theirs. Reuben and Gad weren't idle. They were busy. They were willing to do some things, that they served others. They were even willing to go and do some fighting, but they were going to come back and settle east of the Jordan. They were willing to serve the Lord in some capacity, but you know, service is just fleshly if your heart is not all in for God. You can't override rebellion with good works. Reuben and Gad weren't just bystanders, but they had compromised and settled for less than their inheritance. Now you think about, maybe because of love or finances, you think about you and your spouse have to go and share a meal at a restaurant. Imagine how that goes. Now for Missy and I, we order a plate, and I eat everything I want on the plate, and then I pass it over to her and see if she wants any of what's left. No, that's not how that happens, right? When you share a plate, it's pretty heavily applied that you're going to split that food in half, and you eat half, and they eat half. But a lot of times as Christians, we do the opposite, don't we? We take all that we can for ourselves, and then we give what's left to God. The problem is that we consume a lot of things, and so mostly things that don't matter, but we consume them, and then we give God the leftover crumbs. But discipleship looks different. Discipleship isn't about taking half and giving half. It's about denying yourself. It's not about consumption, but it is about depletion. You remember the words that we read earlier, Zach read earlier, of Jesus in Luke 14. It says in verse 25 that great crowds accompanied him. And he turned and said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Verse 25 says that large crowds followed Jesus, and following is certainly part of discipleship, but these weren't disciples, at least not yet. They were followers, and there's a difference. There's a difference in being around Jesus and being all in with Jesus. There's a difference in being a fan and being a true follower. Disciple means that you want to be like your teacher. Again, there's a difference in just following your teacher and then trying to be like your teacher in every way. Jesus tells these prospective disciples that, okay, if you want to follow me, understand what it means if you're going to go all in. He doesn't see these large crowds and say, let's go baptize all these people. He doesn't see large crowds and get excited. Jesus sees large crowds and gets skeptical. Preachers today, we see a large crowd and we get excited. Jesus gets skeptical. Why are you following me? Do you not know what this entails? He said, you better consider the cost. If you're going to follow me, you better know what you might have to give up. You may have to give up your possessions. You may even have to give up your family. Are you willing to do that for a relationship with Christ? Do you love Jesus more? There's a cost. The offer is free, but there's a cost involved. It's sort of like riding in a car with someone and it's their brand new car. It's a free ride, but here's the deal. When you do that, you put your life in their hands, right? If you crash, you might die. But is it worth it? Well, you're getting to ride in a brand new car. They're a good driver. I don't think they're going to crash the car. The offer is free. It's a great offer, but the offer comes at perhaps a cost. This morning, which side of the Jordan are you on? Many of us are on the right side of the Red Sea. We've left Egypt, been delivered from bondage, but are you moving towards your inheritance? Maybe you're on the right side of the Red Sea, but which side of the Jordan are you on? It's not enough to just be delivered. The Israelites were delivered from Egypt, but they weren't just delivered to sit. God had another destination for them. He wasn't just taking them out of Egypt. He was moving them to someplace else. And in that moving process, they had to have a wilderness experience. And maybe some of you this morning know what that is because you're going through a wilderness experience right now, or you've been through the wilderness before, and you know that life isn't easy, but neither is a life of bondage and slavery. You've left Egypt, but consider the side of the Jordan you're on. The Christian life can seem like a wilderness existence. However, the key to reaching our destination is in the going all in. We have to buy in on discipleship. The Israelites did not. They weren't, and I don't want to follow their lead. I want to make sure that we're certain on which side of the Jordan we're on. I feel maybe like playing Moses this morning, standing before you and imploring you not to settle for less than your inheritance. Don't sit. Fight. Fight for what God has promised, because I believe too many Christians settle. And I want this church to be all in. Don't just let Christianity be a category. Don't just let church be a segment of your life. Let it consume you. Let it affect everything that you do in your life. Too many Christians leave Egypt and they look at baptism like it's fire insurance. Now I can't go to hell. I'm good. But there's so much more you could do and so much more you can pursue. God has so much in store for you, but don't be satisfied with where you are now. I said it last week, and I'm not going to harp on it every week, but don't let technology lead you into a culture of convenience. Facebook Live should never be your plan A unless situations arise that otherwise you have to. Be engaged here. Be involved. Dig deeper in Bible study. Maybe you've never studied the Bible. Start now. Don't settle for superficial Christianity. Work, serve, read your Bible, pray, fast. Do whatever you need to do to get more involved, to go all in completely. Don't just make it a routine. Make it your definition. Don't wait. There's a real urgency here. If your tomorrow doesn't dawn, how will you be remembered? Were you moving forward when you died? Were you found climbing? Go all in and trying to understand in what God is trying to do, how he's trying to do it, and the price that has to be paid in order to accomplish it. What we're doing here every week, I hope it's not just about information. I hope it's about transformation. I don't want to just deliver a sermon. I want it to be something that could be useful, to be all in. All of us here are limping disciples. We all need hope. We all need help. And I want you to be all in on loving God, loving others, and loving his church. Finish off here. Back in 1519, Spanish conquistador Fernando Cortez decided that he was going to go get some loot that he thought the Aztecs were hoarding. And so he took about 500 soldiers, 100 sailors, and 11 ships to the coast of the Yucatan. And although he had a lot of people, he was outnumbered vastly. Cortez's own men became scared, and they devised a plan to hop on the ships in the dead of night and sail off. Cortez caught word of their plan, and he punished them severely. He called the men together and told them that they had better be all in, that he needed a complete buy-in from them in order to complete this mission. And then he did something insane. He sunk the ships. He ordered his own ships to be sunk, and his own men were asking why. He said, if we're going to be successful, I can't have you guys looking back. I need you to be all in. So here's a message this morning. Sink your ship. You know what I mean. We all have a ship. We all have that one vessel that we retreat to, that one thing that keeps us from all going all in. Sink it. There is no plan B. If Jesus can't get us to heaven, we won't be there. That there is no plan B. Sink your ship. Move forward to the promised land. No looking back now. If you're still stuck in Egypt, I hope you decide to leave. I hope you decide to put Christ on in baptism and let us help you leave that bondage of sin. Maybe you've left Egypt, but you've gotten comfortable with where you're at. Let us help you with that. Keep moving forward. Maybe you're having a wilderness experience and you need the prayers and support of this church family. We would love to do that for you as well. What side of the Jordan are you on? There's no excuse this morning to leave here settled and lukewarm. Please come as together we stand and we sing.